Blog Talk Radio.
Now, in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice. Fair use. Successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com.
Hi, and welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Claire Capan, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show. Don Schwartz is an actor and journalist. His book, Telling Their Own Stories, Conversations with Documentary Filmmakers, is available from Amazon. His film reviews and filmmaker profiles appear regularly in CineSource magazine, and Don holds BA, MA, PhD degrees in psychology and counseling. Welcome, Carol and Don, to Dissecting Docs. What documentaries are we going to cover today?
Well, we're reviewing five docs from First Run Features and HBO's. We're going to cover De Niro's fantastic documentary on his father, Heist, Who Stole the American Dream and How We Can Get It Back, Kumare, an Indian-American from New Jersey who sets out gurus and becomes one, and how Oregon legalized marijuana, and we'll end with Capturing Reality, which is part of a documentary six set on filmmaking. Now, Don, since you're the one who writes all these incredible documentary reviews, I want you to tell us what you enjoyed about this, the film. And then since I see hundreds of films through the Dean Grant, I'll add all my comments. And because we've decided that our goal for this show is to create a larger audience for documentary features. We know you can't watch all of the new releases, so we have created Dissecting Docs to tell you what we recommend and why. Okay, so what did you think about Kumare, Don?
Kumare is one of the most fun films, fun documentaries I've ever seen, totally fascinating. It's, again, it's a documentary, but when you watch it, it's kind of hard to imagine. So Kumare was roughly written, directed, and starring Vikram Gandhi. And Vikram Gandhi is a handsome young American born and raised in America, but of 100% Indian blood and culture. He was raised in a very religious Hindu family, and he wanted to address what he saw as issues of people being manipulated in one way or another by religious ideas, words, and religious figures. And he set out to do a documentary about essentially looking at his tradition, the Hindu tradition, and he went to India, and he was doing a very good job of finding phony gurus and revealing that their manipulations and their hypocrisy. And somehow that changed, that transformed into Vikram Gandhi letting his hair grow, letting his beard grow, and taking on a dialect and pretending to be an Indian guru, and who's on his first trip to America, and he gets disciples, authentic disciples, and they shoot the whole thing, and it is an utterly engaging story. And one of the most important things about what happens in this film is that you do not know what's going to happen at the end.
Right. Right. Talk about a film that builds for a big ending, and you start getting nervous. I was getting sick of my stomach thinking, how is he going to tell them, and what's he going to do? And it really had a lot of tension, don't you think?
Yes, talk about nervous. I started cringing the moment they showed him meeting people and engaging them in his teaching, and I got more and more nervous as the film went on.
I know. So as a director, he did a really good job. But I loved it because we were the only ones that knew. We knew from the beginning what the secret was. And so we were taking that into account as we listened to these people pour out their hearts to him. And it was sort of this secret connection between you and the filmmaker. And once in a while, he would look at the camera and give a face like, "Can you believe this?" And you had to laugh because it was this joke. But actually, the joke turned out to have done some good for some certain people that are in the film, right?
Absolutely. And in one way or another, it did good for everybody involved, although the ones who are disappointed, they have to deal with a painful and bitter lesson. But the point of it is a lesson for them, too.
Right. Well, you're talking to someone who's been to India many times. I was at Rajneesh, sitting in out there one summer's evening listening to him talk. And, of course, I loved Sai Baba. So I have been over there, done that, and understand what he's talking about. But I love the fact that he said, "I teach you the only thing I believe in, and that is the guru is inside of you." And in the film, I won't tell you too much, but he did tell them to do an exercise and pretend that you're the guru who tells you what you need to do. And the people did it. And that's what we all should be doing. What is it we need to do to improve our lives? Nobody knows that better than we do, right, Don?
Absolutely. He worded his speeches very carefully so that he was never lying. In a certain sense, in terms of his religious teaching.
Right. So there were many people that followed him that he helped to find that something inside them for strength to achieve their goals. And one of them was losing weight, and that's a visual that we all saw. So there's something to it.
Yes, Carol, as an actor, I was blown away by Vikram Gandhi's performance, and I can't believe Hollywood hasn't grabbed him. He is a major performing talent.
Yes, he is. And thinking from my point of view is how much footage he had to edit, and what a good edit he did, because he must have had so many various strands that he could have added or made this film and go in many different ways, but he didn't. It's a straight line. It's all about this cover-up and how we are all looking for someone to tell us what to do. So he kept it tight, well-edited, well-photographed, good sound, and I think the editors should be commended because of their work on the film. What about you?
Absolutely. The DVD version of the film also includes Vikram Gandhi and his producer commenting. You can watch it with their comments on, or you can watch it with Kumare's comments on.
Well, anyway, I recommend this film, particularly if you love India and if you love Indian people because they're so warm and friendly and loving. I was flying to India one time, and I had an Indian sitting next to me, and I said, "So what is the biggest thing that you produce in India?" And he looked at me and said, "Indians."
Oh.
And that's the truth. But, I mean, I remember traveling through India, and you sit out at on the floor sometimes, on the cement, waiting for a train, and people come up. They sit right next to you, touching you, because it's always so crowded in India that you take up every inch of space. So it's a warm, loving, caring country, and so are the people. And I think he showed us that in many ways, even though the gurus he visited or he talked to did not seem to fulfill his needs. They do fulfill some people's needs. We have to admit that. We're all looking for something outside of ourselves instead of inside. that's what the film taught us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you think of Robert De Niro's film about his father?
Well, that was as touching as a film can be. It was, again, this is called Remembering the Artist, Robert De Niro Sr., and it's directed by Geeta Gandbir and Perry Peltz, and I don't want to leave this out, music by Philip Glass.
Oh,
and this
superb.
Is an HBO film, and it's probably showing right now, and it was released this year. And it is essentially Robert De Niro Jr., our iconic actor, showcasing the work of his father, who was a very talented and very prolific artist. And the film shows a lot of the artist's work, but the most important thing is that it's biographical. It's about the father's life, and especially the father's struggle for recognition.
And to make a living.
Well, yes, to make a living. The impression I received is there was an issue, obviously, about money, but it seemed like there was this deep emotional pain, having his art consistently recognized. Carol, I here's where I had a confusion about this. And this is more about my understanding of the art world, because De Niro Sr. did get a significant amount of recognition in the early part of his career, and then tastes changed. And then people were looking for a different style of work, and De Niro Sr. did not change his style.
Well, this is the sad thing about art. I mean, the taste change, it really, who changed them? I know you have to think about taste in art. Is it also dictated by art critics, or who tells you what to buy? These are questions that were not answered, but they're also important questions. Obviously, the art world turned its back on his style and went to another style, and yet he kept perfecting his craft, and his images are incredibly beautiful, and there's something very relaxing, natural about his art. You really feel comfortable around it. It's a recognition of who you are, and somehow his oval images, just the way that he makes lines, is incredibly brilliant. So that's what happened. I mean, he didn't belabor the point. He just really went on to say how much the father kept studying and improving his art, which most artists would do. But this film was...
And as required, the film contains a lot of the art, and get your hand on the pause button, because you're going to want to pause and just sit there and see what Robert De Niro Sr. did.
Absolutely. Oh, of course, I had to stop and look at his art several times. It's incredible. And it was over so fast, Don. It's a
yes.
Short.
This is, and of course, you won't want to leave them wanting more. They did that with this film for certain. But the centerpiece, it seems to be this bond, this really strong, loving bond between father and son. And I was totally touched by Robert De Niro Jr.'s presence on the screen and how caring he was of his father. The story of how Robert De Niro Jr. essentially had to rescue his father, who was in Paris. That's the father had left America because taste and his kind of work had fallen away, and he went to Paris to try and reinvigorate his career, and that he actually fell into a depression, and Robert De Niro Jr. Went and essentially got his father and brought him back and took care of him.
Yeah, I saw De Niro in a brand new light. I believe that he really... once let us see who he is. There were such wonderful moments in the film where he is honest and open about his relationship with his father, and I love the use of his father's journal, because that gave us much more insight into who the father was, right?
Absolutely. And one thing I want to not leave out is that this documentary, although it is a powerful, it's a powerful experience to see this documentary, it's part of a larger effort on the part of Robert De Niro Jr. to keep the legacy of his father alive, and he's doing everything he can to make his father's paintings available to the public.
Well, I think that's really important because that's what the father created them for. He wanted his art shared and seen and enjoyed. I think that's in the heart of all artists. So this film will definitely do that. But I took the film as a caring, loving family because De Niro's mother stopped her art and went to work to support him so she could raise him. And she couldn't rely on the father for the income. And she had been praised for her art early on, but she gave that up for De Niro. And he honors her for that and knows that it's an incredible gift.
It's a very American story for the time period in which it took place, the 40s and 50s.
Exactly. But I'd like to know how the mother got him into the acting classes and what sacrifices she made to pay for acting and schooling, because all this time, father's still studying art. Even though he's making brilliant work, he can't make a living. So what did you think of De Niro keeping that studio just as it was in memory of his father?
Oh, yes. Thank you for mentioning that. One of the things that De Niro's doing, as you just said, is that the father's studio, I forget the city in which it was, is just being kept immaculate, the way it was when the father was painting. And that, Carol, is this studio open to the public, or I didn't gather one way or the other?
I don't know, but it should be a showcase for his work.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found was that when the father got ill, when the father was dying, the mother took him in and took care of him. So this is a story of two artists and a talented son. And if you think you know De Niro, think again. You should watch this film.
Yeah, you're right. You do see Robert De Niro Jr.'s emotions, authentic emotions, come forward in this film.
Rightfully so. It's an honor to his, it's a tribute to his father. But his mother is woven all through the film. She's in there too. Well,
and
what did
Robert De Niro Jr. is not the formal host or narrator of the film, but he's on camera peppered throughout the entire film, so it's kind of like he's the host escorting you through his father's life.
Yes, it's a uniquely made film. Well done, well directed, well lit. Technically perfect, I think. But you're so engrossed in the story that you're just blown away by the images and by the emotions, the love, the support, the caring, and the story. It's a wonderful story.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, let's move to something else. Let's go to Heist, because that was the winner of our Roy Dean Film Grant. And I have to tell you, I really loved working with the filmmakers. So tell me, what did you think of that film?
Well, if you want to watch a film and get totally infuriated and exasperated, watch Heist, which I highly recommend you do that. Heist is one of the documentaries I've seen that sticks to your ribs. It was directed by Francis Cossey and Donald Goldmacher, and it was released in 2012. And the film is self-distributed, so you go to the film's website and you can purchase it. So Heist is a different kind of documentary. I've seen a number of documentaries about various and sundry corruption, hypocrisy, manipulations of our political and economic system. And Heist is almost like an outline, so each one of the points of Heist could be its own documentary, and that's why I found it very helpful. It helped give me a bigger picture of what has happened in the last 50 years to lead up to the 2008 economic meltdown, and also has led to this, this ever-increasing economic inequity that we live here, live with here in the United States.
Exactly.
And so roughly, I would just say the film documents the specific political and legislative and regulatory moves over the last 50 years or so. And it's gotten a lot of coverage, a lot of exposure. It's been broadcast in 16 countries. It's used extensively by labor unions, and you can get it on iTunes or Amazon. And I've seen it two times. I've just gone through it two times.
Well, yes, because it's so dense. There's so much information in there. But Don, I think that the timing of the film allows you, it's like these little vignettes. And so this happened, and they tell you the statistics, and you are sitting there going, oh, no. And you have time to sort of absorb that, and then they take you back into, and then this happened and this happened. And look at this. Oh, my heavens. So, but it's not, some films give you so much so fast that it's overwhelmed. And this one doesn't. It is timed well, and you can absorb more information, or I could. How did it affect you?
Oh, all I can say is I got it. It was piece by piece. They told the story of a heist. It was as if my home was robbed and I was watching a documentary about the thieves going in the home, grabbing the stuff, and running away with the goods. I must confess, the film includes, you know, how we can get the American dream back. If any documentary of this sort will end with some thoughts and ideas about how the problem can be solved. And the film came out, but Citizens United had already been passed, and the Supreme Court ruling allowing unlimited funding of political campaigns. And so, Carol, I was left with this, knowing about the Citizens United ruling, left with how are we going to get it back? And right now I live with that question.
Yes, well, that takes us to Francis Causey's new film, which I'm sure you'll be interested in hearing. I asked Francis if we could talk about her film because From the Heart is her fiscal sponsor, and Don Goldmacher's too. They're both working on separate films now. But Francis says that it's all too clear in America today that merely electing a government by popular vote does not always lead to a good and just government, one that reflects the hopes, dreams, and desires of a majority of its people. The opinions of Americans today about their federal government is at an all-time historic low, and it's come about as abuse of power by a select few at the expense of many. So it's really follow-up to Heist. It's led to historic political and economic inequities that feel distinctly un-American. But are these inequities really so unique to our times? And we investigated the very founding of America and discovered an inherent and uncomfortable hypocrisy between those sacred words, we the people, as enunciated in the Declaration of Independence. Now, Do Mock Rose C is her new film, and it's spelled DUHMOCRUHSEE. Exclamation point. Do Mock Rose C will make viewers question everything they think they know about their democracy. It's in production now, and in April they're going to do a fundraising campaign, and you'll be able to, it began production in April, and in the fall they're going to do their launching campaign with From the Heart on Indiegogo, so you'll be able to support them that way. So that sounds like a good doc, doesn't it?
Yeah. After I saw it, I got this idea, trying to not be totally pessimistic, that nothing can be done to get control back. So this is about the economic inequity, you know, created by the various machinations. So we have a lot of different economic indices, and I'm suggesting the Economic Inequity Index, which would be an amalgam of various measures about how wealth is inequitably distributed in the United States. And I'd like it to be one of those signs in Times Square that's always going up or down, depending upon how much justice and fairness there is economically in the U.S.
That's a brilliant idea. Well, Don Gomacher is working on Ruthie and Connie. And the log line is, they kissed, came out, sued New York State for domestic partnership benefits, and won. Now, their great-grandmothers of the marriage equality movement finally get married. So it went live June the 18th on iTunes and Amazon. It will continue a digital rollout courtesy of the distributor, Archard Company. And they are doing outreach to both Jewish and LGBT film festivals and organizations, because these are the grandmothers who launched it with their landmark lawsuit in 1988. So you can visit the website at Ruthie, R-U-T-H-I-E, and A-N-D, Connie, .com, Ruthie and Connie, the movie.com, for more information.
So that's news to me, so I want to see it.
Yeah. It's a great film. All right, so let's move to Evergreen. What did you think about that story?
Evergreen, the first thing that happens, this film is about the approximately year-long 2012 campaign that led to the legalization of recreational use of marijuana in the state of Washington. And it's directed by Riley Morton, and it's distributed by First Run Features. And so I sat down to watch this film, and I'm going to see what happened, how they got to legalize marijuana, because that's a huge story. And the first thing that I learned is that there was a strong fight against the legalization by marijuana users. And so you don't see a fight between conservative and liberal forces. You see a fight within the liberal community about this particular ballot measure, which is 502, to legalize marijuana. And the people that were fighting against the legalization had some very strong points.
Well, right. They were worried that because you can't drive if you've had medical marijuana, and so the people who need that for their illness say, what am I going to do? How am I going to get from here to there?
Right. One of the benefits of legalizing was that it would keep people out of the justice system, especially children, young people, teenagers. But the law disallows possession and use under the age of 21. So that doesn't solve that problem. The bigger problem is that the law includes very, very small amounts of THC, the marijuana active ingredient, in your bloodstream. So either young people driving would not get stopped for simple possession, they would get stopped for driving under the influence, which is a much more serious charge. And then people who use medical marijuana, the amount that the law allows of molecules of THC in your blood, it would take more than a day for a medical marijuana user to not use in order to be safe to drive, maybe more than that. So that means that ill people would either not be able to drive or just take their their life in their own hands and risk getting busted for DUI. So the forces that work in this film, the pro 502 and anti 502 campaigns, the anti 502 campaign had about $6,000 to work with, and the pro had $6 million to work with.
That's quite right. That's what it took, $6 million to get all those signatures on the ballot and then get it on the ballot and then promote it. And we got to see the inside story on how to change a law. That I enjoyed.
Right, right. And so I called the filmmaker, Riley Morton, and I asked, well, what's happened since the passage? Are young kids getting busted now for DUI? Are people, medical marijuana users, are having trouble with being able to live their life under the new law? And essentially, Riley said the jury's still out as to the impact of the law. So my feeling was that it was a major step forward to get legalization, but I think the no on 502 campaign points are valid points, and they would be an ongoing concern.
Well,
so
I'd
like to see the rest of the story. Go ahead.
How they can they have to go and get those changes put back on another ballot and then put to end. So they're going to have to raise more money to do that. Of course, I looked at the contributors. There were some very large contributors there, which indicates that there's going to be a lot of money going into the sale of the legalized marijuana. Would you think so?
Right, and it's also a changing of worlds because there was a world of medical marijuana shops and a culture, a strong culture, and this initiative puts the sale of marijuana into a different world, and I think you're going to see a change of cultures, and there could be continuing culture clashes between those two worlds. But money was, I would say, the number one issue. The state had a $2 billion deficit. The projections to the state of the legalization were dramatic about how much tax dollars and how much the overall economy would be affected. So this is a work in progress. This story is not finished, and I hope Riley Morton or others will continue covering the story.
Me too, because they said that it could be possibly $528 million in tax revenue, and of course that's a great opportunity for any state, but particularly for their state. And they said the government spent $14 billion to arrest marijuana smokers. And they said it was the second largest crop in Oregon, so why not legalize and tax it and get that revenue in? So, yes, we want to know. Everybody said, oh, well, we don't like those numbers. But in a year or so, you'll be able to see what's going on. $528 million is brilliant.
That's true. And so one way that they're getting that money is that the law disallows home growing.
So you have to, oh, that's another thing I didn't catch. You can't grow your own, but you do have to go buy it. So that's why the investment money was there. And actually, they probably had to write it that way to get the money to put the law through, because somebody had to cough up that $6 million. And it came in big chunks for them, so that was important. Mm-hmm. So now, they said that 90% of the arrests were for possession of marijuana. That sounds so high to me. I just am not sure what all went on with where they got all the information for the film. But they did say the deaths from alcohol a year were 79,000, but deaths from marijuana were zero. So that was one of the benefits they felt, that this was a safer product than alcohol.
You know, Carol, I'm reflecting about the power of documentary films, because we don't talk about how well the film was made, we do mention about, you know, quality, image quality, sound quality, you mentioned it, but we end up talking about the subject of the film. The films are so well made that we are engaged with the story, not the filmmaking.
That's right. And when people call me about my film grant and they say, what's the most important thing to put on my application? What do you want from me? And I say three things: story, story, story. That's it. Don't tell me what camera you're using or that you're going on this great location. Just tell me a good story. And that's what we're talking about. All of these films today are good stories, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. So a film made cinema verite in very, very trying environments. It's not going to have good sound. It's not going to have a good image, but you're going to be totally engaged. And then another film could be made for millions of dollars and have great image and get great sound, but you don't get engaged.
That's so right.
That's the power of documentary film.
Yes, a good documentary film. Right. And now we are, every time there's anything in the news about Oregon, we're going to be there listening because we feel like we went through that whole process with the people that lived there. We know what they went through, right?
Yes. And I'm really concerned about the anti-502 points. I want to see what happens with young people and with medical marijuana users. Some people believe that medical marijuana is a hoax. I have too many ill friends to know that that's not true.
Right. Well, I'm interested in knowing what Obama is going to do about it because the federal government still says it's illegal to smoke marijuana. That's what the feds say. So does the Fed trump the state in laws? Of course. So how is that going to work out? And so far, at the end of the show, you saw that card that said Obama said he would not overrule the state decision?
Yes. It appears that we're on a slow track to national legalization. And it might be next year, it might be 10 years from now, but it seems like that's going to happen.
Well, the interesting thing is that this means that other states could take this film and watch it and learn so much about how they put the bill, how they worked to get the law changed, because they have most of the major steps are in the film.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And both leaders, the pro and the anti leaders, were compelling figures in this film. The Steve Sarich was the anti, and a woman named Allison, I apologize, I don't have that in front of me, was the pro, and they both made their points powerfully.
Yeah, they did. I thought they did a very good job because it was a complicated issue, and it was smokers versus smokers, which shocked me. Anyway, I really enjoyed it. So let's talk about this six CD set that First Run Features has created, because I love it. The art of documentary filmmaking is what we're viewing right now. But the whole set is such a great gift for someone, and I think it really belongs in a filmmaker's home. They cover directors and scripts and then documentary filmmaking, and then they have that great show we covered before on the lesbians in the film industry and what they're doing and how creative and expansive they are. So what did you think of this show?
Oh, yes. Carol, I want to say I totally agree with you about the set. This set is for filmmakers, and it's for everybody who loves movies. I think it's a must-have. If you love movies, this is, everybody should get the set, because you get so much behind the scene, behind the screen, stories about how films get made, why films get made. So again, it's called The Art of Filmmaking, and it's from First Run Features, and so capturing reality. The Art of Documentary is one of the six films. And, excuse me, it's actually one of the five films. Capturing Reality is a two, no, what is it? There's five films, Carol, and six discs. Because one of
That's
them
right.
is right. Actually, two of the films are double discs. But Capturing Reality, the second disc is not part of this set. So you can buy Capturing Reality as part of the five film set, or you can buy Capturing Reality standalone. When you buy it standalone, you get a bonus disc of 4 hours of additional material. And the film is directed by Pepita Ferrari and is produced by the National Film Board of Canada and was released in 2008. And this is a movie, Carol, that I'm sitting here watching it, listening to it, and the documentary filmmakers are speaking about their work, and they have so much to say. I stop it, and I reverse it, and I listen again. Or I have to stop it and think about what I just heard. It is so rich in ideas that multiple viewings are almost a must.
Absolutely. Oh, and it's the information that each filmmaker gives you, and they have selected such incredibly brilliant filmmakers, and they ask them all to various questions, from technical to the emotional to the philosophical questions. And Jennifer Fox says, making documentaries, it's all about being inspired by the moment. And Kevin McDonald said, real life is so much more interesting and exciting, and the stories are so great, but even better than you could make up. And this is truly what docs are.
Right. So the filmmakers, they pepper the whole film with 38. We're talking interviews of 38 filmmakers with bits and pieces of their work, and they roughly organize it in terms of the making of a film. So you are hearing about the inception of a film, and then the shooting, and the editing, and narration, music, and then they talk about the ethical and philosophical issues involved with making a documentary films. And it's just a rough organization. It's not like they have chapter headings or anything. And so they had major names, of course. They had Werner Herzog and Earl Morris. And there was an elephant in the living room. I don't know if you noticed this. Michael Moore was notably absent.
Absolutely. Wonder why.
I wonder why about it, too. I guess we need to have a Michael Moore-style documentary about Michael Moore.
Well, someone did refer to him and honor him for the fact that he helped documentaries tremendously with that first sale where he sold a doc for $10 million was a major breakthrough in the sale of documentaries for the price paid. And he went into theaters right away, and it was all over the news, everybody talking about it. So he sort of was he blasted us into outer space with documentaries. So,
yes, and then whenever you make yourself into a big target, you do get darts thrown at you, and there's a couple darts thrown at him in this film.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I like most of the people that were in the film and that were reviewed, but Errol Morris is also another favorite of mine. And so he said he was saying that what he doesn't like about docs is that you're constantly being told what is expected, and that docs have to be one thing rather than a multiple of possible things. And he certainly does that. How your imagination with his close-ups of and the thin blue light. I mean, you were so captivated. And he's showing you the shoes of the officer, and he's showing the feet from the other side of the car, and all these insert shots that have you totally glued to the film because he is creating this mystery. I love his work, as well as everybody else seems to love it too. But Jessica Yu is another favorite of mine. And she says that Making Docs is in the realm of the unreal. That's one of her films that she did, in the realm of the unreal. She said that you really have to, that it's the story you want to use to propel you, because when you decide to make a doc, it is a very long investment, and you have to find a story that will keep you interested over a long period of time, 3 to 5 years, sometimes more. And so that's really the secret, I think, for a documentary filmmaker to find something that they just can't live without doing, right?
Absolutely. And so I've got the second disc, the bonus disc, and I'm going to be spending the next couple months listening and watching those four hours of interviews. It's so rich. There's so much information, and there's plenty of controversies about what is appropriate and not appropriate for putting into documentary films and for the way you make those documentary films.
Right. And then they got to the technical side. I really loved that. I mean, they showed us cinematographers in really strange places. They even had one cinematographer who put his camera right in the middle of a river. And in rode some horse banditos. And they took their horses right to the center of the river. He was perfectly positioned. And the people from the village were on the other side of the bank. And they were talking to the banditos about the problems or whatever is going on in the country. And that reminded me of a shot from a John Wayne film where he captured, it was a one-take shot that is really well known with Richard Widmark and another incredible actor. And John Wayne put his camera in the middle of the river and photographed them sitting at the side of the water. So he had one master shot. And that's filmmaking. I mean, you that cinematographer, I don't know if he remembered that scene or not, but he placed his camera in the right place. He got the right shot. And that's what it's all about in documentary filmmaking, to try to figure out what's going to happen next and be there in the right spot to get it, capture that for us. It's capturing reality. And then they talked about sound and how important it is, and I totally agree with that because, Don, you know, I see so many films that come in for the film grant, and they're in an incredible place on location. They have the greatest shot possible. Everything's there, but they don't have the sound.
That sound is one of my main gripes, and not just about documentary films, but independent films. What's the use of capturing these images and sounds if you do not understand, cannot hear what's being said? So I want to hear and see every word, and so I particularly appreciate documentary films that make sure that we can hear. All the ones that we're reviewing today do a good job of making sure we can hear what people are saying.
Yes, they were all recorded well. And I loved one of the docs was about, it was taking place on a river. They made sure they had the river sounds in the film. And when they showed us the clips, the river was a part, it was a character in the film. That was mainly through the sound that they brought the river to life for us, which I greatly appreciated. And I have a man who donates to my film grant named Jerry Deaton in L.A. He is a sound expert. And I ask him, why is it that when you're putting a little crew together and you have something to shoot and everybody says, oh, I'll do it for free, but you never find a sound person for free? And Jerry said, you'd never want a free sound person because you're going to get what you pay for. Sound people demand to be paid for their work, and rightfully so. And you have to admit how important they are, because Jerry's given some talks for me about sound. And when you stop to think about what you have to do when you go in a room, you have to, it's like unplug the fridge and seal up this. What's the outside? There is so much work to be done to get to a low level of exterior sound before you start recording. That when that isn't done, you pay a fortune to get them to clean that up in the sound editing. And that documentary filmmakers just don't have that kind of money. So we learned a lot in this disc set about filmmaking, and I think that I forgot to mention one of the films is about Sven Nyquist, Light Keeps Me Company, and you can only imagine how beautiful that film is. You really get to touch on his incredible spiritual relationship with light. So I recommend this this disc set. I think it's a lot of fun. I really think filmmakers have gotten will enjoy it. It's a nice gift.
Carol, about capturing reality, speaking of sound, you have a choice. When you put it on, you can choose English or French subtitles. I have a hard time finding any kind of closed captioning or subtitles on most of the documentary films I see. So it was a delight to at least see that choice between English and French.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. Well, we had some great French filmmakers on there. I have a list of docs now from that show that will take me through the summer for sure. So thank you, Don. Thank you for the work you've done to bring all this information to us. I really appreciate it.
Well, the feeling is mutual, Carol.
Okay, so Claire, thank you for hosting our show. We appreciate your support. And those people who are listening, if you have any special docs that you'd like Don to review and for us to talk about on Dissecting Docs, please email me at caroledean@att.net. And that's a Texas name. It's called caroledean@att.net. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next month with more.
Yes.
And also I'd like to say another way to reach you, Carol, is through your website at fromtheheartproductions.com. There's a way to contact her through there as well. Great show,
thank you,
both of you. Thanks.
Okay,
thanks
for joining us. Bye.
Bye.
I want to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Productions. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAIKLEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at FromTheHeartProductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.